Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you. We're getting it done a little early this week, recording on Wednesday morning, making the most of our time before the hurricane's going to probably get us on the outskirts. Some rain and some wind, hopefully not bad, but truly those in the path as we live in Florida, both of us, Brentley, hunker down, be safe, be smart, because as we know, these things can throw towns, areas into a bit of a tizzy. So let's hope this is an easy one, if you will.
Yeah, this is always a weird time, you know, this late summer, early fall, and you don't want the hurricane to hit you, but you know, when you look at that path and it keeps jogging west or east, you know, someone is not looking at it the same way you are. So yeah, definitely we'll be keeping those in the path and our thoughts and prayers. And, you know, I'm just happy, you know, not to, you know, diminish, you know, the dangers of hurricanes, but I am happy to get some rain because I'm trying to grow some grass, Burko. And I don't know if you've ever tried to grow grass, but I somehow I'm just not very good at it. I've seen about 100 different types of weeds in my lifetime over the last few years of home ownership. I probably see a new one every other week, but I can't really grow grass. I don't know if you have any tips for me.
I do not. Give up. I've seen a lot of my neighbors resod their entire front yards, and within 2 years, it looks like mine, which is okay. It's reasonable. What I've learned, as long as it's green, don't care if it's weeds, don't care if it's whatever. But Florida, St. Augustine, Bermuda, whatever you want to put down, it does not work. So I'm going to save you time and money. Just accept what you have, do the bare minimum, get the water down. And as long as it's green and not burnt out, you've won. That's my Florida grass situation. We got a lot to recap. We're going to get right to it, talking about one of those that might be in the path of the hurricane. The folks up in Atlanta are supposed to get some rain over the next 48 hours. So we wish them the best. And that said, we welcome in Bruce Hepler, the men's head golf coach at Georgia Tech. Appreciate you joining us this morning on College Golf Talk. You guys are coming off a really nice win at Olympia Fields. Let's start there. Your reaction to a little bonus golf on that morning to get the job done and beat arguably one of the strongest fields you will see all fall season.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously not a great start in Knoxville. We've got a little bit of starting over again with the younger inexperienced group and didn't putt very well there, but kind of still felt like, you know, I think we can put a good team together at some point this year and went up there. And obviously it's a great test. Coach Small had it the way he wanted for the first day with the greens, concrete streets and stuff. And it was the challenge. And then the rains came in and made it a little bit softer. But again, I felt like somewhat going toe to toe with Arizona State for 36 holes for everybody but one group. Said a lot about our guys, and I think one of the best wins since I've been here, to be honest with you, but based on the field and the difficulty of the golf course and where our team is right now. So really excited and happy for the guys.
You talked about rebuilding. You've lost a lot over the last year or two. How do you go about it? You've been doing this a very long time. What does a fall look like for you when you have a team with some unknown commodities, if you will, question marks, wondering if what you saw during the recruiting translates immediately to college golf?
Well, I guess the one thing that I just can't get my hand around is, you know, everyone's afraid of the 500 rule, right? And it has eliminated a lot of some of the really great events because somebody's going to go 0 for 14. And but never really tried to back the schedule down in recruiting. We've talked to guys about why you want to come here, and it's to play against the best players in the best tournaments. And so I think you can somewhat send the wrong message to your team. All of a sudden, if we see a couple guys leave or three guys leave and the schedule changes and we're not there again, it's almost like telling them that you don't believe in them. And so it's, you know, you just take it and go. And it's funny. I think it was 25 or 6 years ago. And now that he's retired, I can use his name. Coach Penley goes, when Bryson Cooch left, he goes, well, at least that's over in Atlanta now. And so we've kind of been using that for years. You know, you just try to, I guess, establish in the mind of your players that it's the golf program, and it's bigger than everybody. And it, no matter who it is, it does the names change, but it's still a program that should try to compete nationally. And just, I guess it's a mindset, and you just trust that what you've seen, guys get better in your program, and you just get ready for the next year, whoever's here.
Georgia Tech doesn't have to worry about the 500 rule. Come on, guys. Bruce, do you have any growing grass tips for me real quick? Or?
Well, I know one thing. I'm glad Burgo's not in charge of our practice facility, because that was really disappointing. I thought he might be the sod guy, and he threw the sod guy under the bus. So, you know, one thing, the other thing I would add is, if it's closely mown, it looks better with you, even if it's weed. So don't let it get long. Keep it closely mown, and again, throw the water at it. But I would have gone with the sodding thing, but he's thrown that completely under the bus as well.
Yeah, no, we had sod way back when, I think when we first bought the house, and it died, and it formed this impenetrable layer that I think is maybe giving me some issues. But to get back on the rails, one of the key players I think so far for you this year has been Benjamin Reuter. Kind of an interesting journey so far in college golf. Can you give us a sense of kind of where he's been and how far he's come?
Yeah, he showed up, you know, raring to go, and played really well his freshman year, and was part of that. But, you know, sometimes English is a second language in college, as it makes it a little bit of a challenge. And so we kind of struggled sometimes with managing everything that you have to do as a college athlete. And then just last year, we had a conversation, and I knew we were replacing, obviously, Connor and Ross, and kind of felt good about, you know, Carson and Kale, and thought, well, do we want to use another guy's year up? And so we kind of just came up with a plan to redshirt, and got some of the more difficult courses out of the business school out of the way for him. And so he's got a real manageable schedule now. He's way more grown up. And so I felt like if we were ever going to get any great stuff out of him, it would be the next 2 years, and off to a pretty good start, and just kind of what we thought he might be. But I just think he needed to step back. He had a good summer in Europe. But I think he's kind of on the other side of the academic front. Again, sometimes math and those kind of things, when it's not in your language, is tough, but he's done well and kind of gotten himself right, and look for 2 great years from him.
No, I'm glad you mentioned the academics, because Georgia Tech is probably unlike many other schools in the country, and at least golf programs, to where I feel like golf is almost second, if not a 1B to academics 1A. What's kind of the best story you have in terms of one of your players, not struggling with school, but maybe when academics has been kind of a challenge and maybe made you sweat a little bit in terms of a guy staying eligible or something like that?
Well, we really managed to stay away, I think, from the eligibility front. I guess I can throw them under the bus now. They're gone as well, and they're doing their thing. But it was when Andy and Ogletree and Ty and Luke were freshmen. And we're just rolling along there. And about 10 days in the semester, Andy's dad calls me and he goes, "I haven't seen any charges on the account for any books yet." So we're playing this match play tournament at Eastlake. And I think Andy went 10-1, and he'd come back to the room and talk to Luke about how great golf was and stuff. And we kind of have this deal where you're supposed to be pretty near a 3.0 to get to go to Hawaii in January. And to be honest, between the two of them, they put it together right on the number 3.0 between the two of them. And, you know, at that point in time, obviously your coaching philosophy changes and stuff. And I just kind of thought, you know, I think those two probably, I don't know that the academic was really the draw here. Obviously, Ollie played here, and Luke knew about the golf, and Andy, you know, the tour players and stuff. So those were two guys, I think, who showed up that really wasn't a huge part of their decision, where others it's plays a part in that, and just decided if we left them home, they'd probably go to as many classes here as they would if they were in Hawaii. So took them along, did some study hall, and they kind of turned it around and realized again that it's just part of your responsibility, and you might as well learn something while you're in school. And we've got a proud tradition of graduating our guys and, you know, basically a perfect APR score for 18 years. And they finally bought in, and both of them graduated in 4 years. So sometimes it takes a little while. It really is still a place where I think that attitude is probably more important than your aptitude. If you don't have an appreciation for getting a college degree and it's just a golf experience, probably the wrong place. But if guys just understand it's part of the deal, we really haven't had any eligibility issues or run into any of that stuff, because the guys we've gotten kind of buy into stuff. So, but that that was a little unnerving when those two cats rolled in there with a 3.0 between the two of them in the fall of their freshman year.
Well, Kuchar loved basketball games too, so that was a that was an issue.
That's another story. Yes, it is.
I love that line. I'm going to use it with my two boys. Attitude trumps aptitude. If you go at it the right way, you get. I love it. As my boys are almost 9 and 11, and we're getting to that age of you actually have to roll up your sleeves sometimes. Love that. Bruce, you recently signed a contract extension. We always seemingly talk about the journeys of these young men and women on College Golf Talk. What's your journey been like from early days to now Atlanta for the better part of three decades?
Well, obviously mentored under two wonderful people in Coach Knight and in Coach Holder, and salute to both of them. Probably don't get this job if it wasn't for having worked for them. I think Homer Rice acknowledged that and recognized that thing. So obviously a big deal. Probably tried to be Mike when I got here, to be honest with you, because obviously he'd been so successful. You'd see the things that he'd done that let's just follow that up. But kind of really trying to find out who you are and how you're going to do things. Probably pretty hard on guys early on. Obviously, Coach Blackman and I were very different. That was kind of a shocker for them. But, you know, you get here and you finish last five times your first year. We just came off and winning the national championship in Stillwater and actually thought I kind of knew what I was doing. And it took about 5 months to realize that maybe I didn't know anything about what I was doing. And so, you know, confidence gets beat up, kind of like a player that, you know, comes in as a freshman. It doesn't go well. So I really kind of wondered what I was doing. And we just kept plugging away. I think probably isn't ideal that you go from celebrating victories to where almost now you, I don't know, somewhat coach out of fear of failure. Someone asked me the other day what continues to motivate you to get up in the morning. And I guess it just, you don't ever want it to go bad, right? You don't want it to look like you got tired or can't do it anymore. You can't relate to the guys. So, you know, it is a wonderful job, Steve. The people ask me all the time about it. And I guess the line I would use, you've got a front row seat to watching dreams come true. And that's a special experience. To just be there at a USAM when somebody wins or they're going to go to the Masters or watch them play in those things and then obviously win their first college event or do those kind of things. To be able to, like, not be outside the ropes, but to have the front seat to the dreams is just – it's the greatest job in the world.
Can't let you move forward without talking about your relationship with the UNLV men's basketball team. Brentley and I know the story, but people listening, when you shared it with us at Greyhawk a year and a half ago, mind-boggling some of the things you did, all fun and games, but Bruce Hepler with the running Rebs, give us the quick summary of that.
Would you want the Louisville trip or just a general summary? What specifically are you looking for?
Anything you want. The stage is yours.
Well, Jerry's passed away, so I think we're now clear to go on this as well. So they're ranked number one in the country. I'm kind of helping do stuff. Game management was my internship after graduate school and got involved with being a cheerleader supervisor, and that meant we went to every game and hung around the basketball program. So we're in Louisville. They're ranked number one in Starry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, for those of you old enough to remember. And all of a sudden, the guys in the hotel go, hey, we're hungry. Can we go get something to eat? So I check with the coaches. I've got a van. We're driving around Louisville about 10 o'clock at night. And they said, hey, just pull up this convenience store. And we walk in. And all of a sudden, each one of them have two Colt 45 malt liquors in their hands. And here I'm in there with these guys going, we can't be doing this, guys. This is, you know, no, we do this all the time. Don't worry about it. So drove around for about 20 minutes, breaking every law in the state of Kentucky. And snuck up the back stairs, so I thought everything was fine. So I'm sitting on the front row in Casey Jones's seat because he didn't show up for the game. And we're down. This is a 10 a.m. West Coast time game now. And where I've been out all night. And we're down 25 in the first half. And I'm thinking, man, when Jerry finds out about this, things are not going to be good for old Bruce. But I came back and lost by three. But it was an interesting time, kind of fun to travel with basketball. I always got the towel for Tark, did the fireworks. And it's a great time to be around college hoops.
Might be one of the great backstories, Brentley, that Bruce Hepler and the running Rebs and then Tark's towel. It's worth hearing that again for sure. Real quickly, Bruce, you talked about your motivations, how they tend to remain the same with how you started as a head coach. how have you changed with a coach with NIL and how college athletics looks a whole lot different than just 5, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, and we still, I guess, that's still an unknown, right? Until this lawsuit gets settled, we really don't even have an idea. We've talked about what it might look like. You know, the name, image, and likeness stuff. I guess the kids who've come to see us the last few years, no one's really stuck out their hand and asked, you know, what am I going to get? We kind of have a different philosophy, I guess, of not really, I guess, giving money that in that regard to get here, but to reward those who succeed here. I know everybody's got a little different philosophy, and that may change once this new whole new world begins again. But I just feel like it could be a locker room problem. Some high school kids promised this money. You got guys making All-America on your team, and they're not getting the same thing. And so again, everybody's going to look at it differently. But I think it's something that right now you can use. Like, for example, I think Luke Clanton is an example of what Matt Kuchar couldn't do. I mean, I think Luke's probably, I'm guessing from what he said, is that he's taken care of and that he can get to play in these professional events and he can stay in school. And it's a great opportunity to have him around because he can afford to play in those professional events because he's getting some money to be able to do that. Where, you know, Matt had to pay for the Masters, paid for the U.S. Open, and that was expensive. So I think that's a benefit, that someone who's successful then can stay in college and do the thing rather than having to afford to maybe take the money and run away. So I think that's the real benefit there. And certainly my feelings are that we have a lot of wonderful guys who've been on 30, 40, 50% because you've got 4.5 scholarships. And so I think it's a big believer to maybe use that to like true up everybody to a full scholarship, because there's other student athletes at Georgia Tech who are on full rides and don't have any bills. And our guys work just as hard and are just as successful. So the mantra around here a little bit more is, let's make sure that, you know, if we need to, that we can take care of their expenses and to get them here and to go to school. And then if all of a sudden somebody succeeds and Crystal's got to go play in Europe or play at the U.S. Amateur and do those things, then that's the time, I think, to try to use that to alleviate some of the burden that they've experienced in the past.
With the way that college sports are going, Bruce, with the move away from the scholarship limits to the roster caps, and I think it might even be in stone now, but golf, men's and women's, moving to 9 maximum spots on the roster. How many programs, either on the men's side or even the women's side, how many programs do you see actually fully funding 9 scholarships?
I guess I've kind of had some offline conversations with different people. And I think that from what I've gathered, the first priority at most places is going to be, let's do the revenue share. So you've got to find $22 million to start with, right? And I think that's the priority because that's what benefits everybody. There's one metric that I had not learned about, guys, to where I'm not so sure there's going to be a bunch of additional men's scholarships awarded. Because obviously with roster cuts, you're going to see the number of men student athletes go down, right? And there's a metric of the number of males total. You obviously have the campus ratio, right? But then you have a ratio of the number of male student athletes and female student athletes who are receiving aid in regards to how the number of male and student athletes in total. So if you drop the number of men down by 80 or 90 young people at every place and the scholarships stay the same, then obviously that ratio goes higher. And even becomes a bigger problem because now more of the men are receiving aid. So I don't know. No one really knows. But I think you may see some additions on the women's side because if the revenue share goes away from Title IX, which we still don't know whether Title IX impacts, you know, that part of the settlement or not. But if it doesn't, and all of a sudden you see this revenue sharing be distributed by how much you contribute to it, then a lot of that money is going to go to football and basketball and not really go around very much. And so I think you have to take care of that a little bit on the women's side to balance things out. So I would be surprised in the beginning that a lot of them go that far. Just in the conversations that I've had, I think a lot of people initially thought, well, that's easy. I've got the money. You know, I've got an endowment here that will cover all 9 if that's necessary. But again, you're changing the ratios and you're changing Title IX. And so I still think there's a lot to be decided, but I don't see on the men's side, all of a sudden 40 teams having 9 scholarships. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. I think if there's one thing I've known from covering college athletics for over a decade, it's to expect anything. But it's been kind of a tumultuous time in our sport the last year plus. I remember seeing you on stage at the coaching convention in December, introducing Mark Brody. We had everything go on with Spike Mark and scoring and rankings and all this stuff. How more confident in you, or are you of that a year later, than you were maybe last August?
Well, I feel better. And, I've had a relationship with the Clip people for, many years now, long before they got involved in this. And I do think that they will get it right as far as allowing us to function together with the scoring, with the rosters, with reporting the results and all those kinds of things. And probably it looks like to me provide more clarity and more transparency as to why we are where we are. I know that created the transparency somewhat created some trauma last year. I still, to be honest with you, have some questions about the ranking system itself. I don't know enough to know, but I get concerned that it appears that who you beat doesn't matter. That somehow margin of victory and stroke differential, which was not in the, again, this is just, we're just talking. Yeah. Initially, it didn't appear that stroke differential was going to appear in the new ranking at all. And then there was a call made by a couple conferences, and that got changed. And now it seems to be like it's plays a major role. So by not really knowing what's in it, but I just kind of feel like what we did at Olympia Fields really matters. And I don't think it matters as much as maybe it did before with the way Mark lashed at his rankings, and that'll all get sorted out. But hopefully over time, again, anytime you start over again, there's going to be, you're comparing 1 year versus 30 years with Golstat. That's just not a fair comparison. And so hopefully conversations will allow, and people, I just hope people are willing to have a conversation and not everyone be the smartest person in the room and take input from people who've been around, from whether that's from the you guys who cover the sport and understand it. I think we need a group of folks to talk about really what it should look like. That happened really fast. It was a mess, obviously, of the utmost degree. I think we're on the other side of that now, but I have great confidence in the people at Clip to be able to make sure that whatever the ranking system is, because it's not theirs, right? They're just publishing the results and running the formulas that are in there, that will eventually be what everybody wants. And then it's just a conversation with the NCAA Golf Committee as to what really matters in our sport. But again, it appears to me, I don't know everything, that maybe who you beat doesn't matter. But I can go and toe-to-toe with Matt's guys there in Chicago. It was one of my most satisfying days as a coach in 40 years. And to beat them and those teams, I think should matter than having some little clam bake at your place and winning by 48 shots, which, again, I may be speaking about stuff that I don't, that's just what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bruce, I appreciate that you consider Berko and I to be worthy of sitting in a room making any sort of decisions. That's very, very, very flattering.
Well, no, but you follow the sport, you know the players, yeah. You know the teams. I mean, I'm not saying maybe, I don't know, be decision makers, but certainly should be people in the conversation of what it should look like. You know what I mean? That's because fair. Again, I think mm-hmm. the knowledge that you guys possess of having covered this so closely for so long, that there's some institutional knowledge that you two possess that I think would be valuable in almost any decision, even with the GCAA that we make. Mm-hmm. You don't want to exclude people that know the sport.
Well, I have some ideas of getting a more accurate coaches poll, but that's for a different pod. My last question for you, Bruce, you coached a pretty interesting talent the last 4 years in Christo Lamprecht, 6'8", 6'9". It seems like he grows every story that gets written about him to where he'll be like 7'5" pretty soon. But what were the unique challenges for Christo playing golf that you witnessed in your time with him?
Well, obviously you just have the stress and the strain on the back, right? As you noticed, he eventually started using a long putter, and that wasn't because he missed little putts. That's just was easier on his practice. So, I think I saw the thing in Golf Digest they did that was probably a better description of the challenges that he had and has, being that tall, being that far away from the golf ball. Obviously, on the one hand, the leverage with the driver creates incredible speed and some stuff you just don't get to see all the time, but maybe not the ideal scenario for hitting a wedge to 6 feet all the time. So he's got to work through that and manage those different things. Although, again, both of you cover golf. There are very few people who are good at everything, right? Nobody, you don't find the guy who's the best driver, the best iron player, the best, I mean, you just, Scottie Scheffler at this point in time right now, but from a statistical standpoint. So I think you have to, he's going to have to kind of magnify what he's really good at. And then he's got to kind of squeeze on some of those things that he's just got to get better at. I don't know that, you know, the Korn Ferry Tour, the courses there, the skill set that's required there is different than on the PGA Tour. I mean, it's a wedge fest out there. I've talked to the guys. We've had a million of them play there, and it's low scores, and it's scoring, and it's wedge and wedge and wedge and wedge. And I've talked with Christo, and that's probably not his greatest strength. So that's something he's got to work on, because that's where he's playing right now. And but again, I think his skill set may be translating better to a PGA Tour event than it does a Korn Ferry event. Not trying to make excuses for him, but again, have had enough guys play both tours to know what's really needed. And so he just got to get better. But again, I think that it was the health thing. You know, obviously we had the problem at the NCAA. That was the only time that really ever happened at the wrong time, but he's got to be very careful. I think he went and did some testing and said that his below the waist hips down is probably 150% stronger than average, but his upper body is not. So he's going to have to just, you know, until now he has time. We don't have to go to class. We don't have homework. And now I think you take all those hours and start trying to take care of yourself a little bit better physically.
One last one for you, Bruce, a reference to the new contract extension. How long do you think and want to continue coaching? And when your days are done leading the Yellow Jackets, how would you like to be perceived, remembered by players, by people like us, those in college golf with the impact that you've made?
Well, certainly what it does. I mean, you know, you can go online and see that I'm 64. I know that I couldn't coach a bad team. I've told the alums, look, you're not going to have to go meet with the AD. Okay. That's not going to be necessary. I'll be gone a year before you go meet with him. So you've got your health. Guys, the reality is you see in the news, 64-year-old guy dies. I mean, you know, you'd like to retire with some help. Obviously sacrificed hours upon hours with my wife and my children and recruiting and doing all this. And you know, they're still out there and like to spend some time with them. What the contract does is allows me to kind of maybe walk a little away a little bit more when it makes sense for me. Also what's best for the program. You can't do this stuff forever. I don't care who you are. And I guess a little bit when the day that I don't feel like the guys here are getting my best effort because you just don't have the energy or I don't think the passion will ever be a problem, but I can't do the things at 64 that I did when I was at 34, and the guys who choose us owe my best effort. And so those will all kind of go into that. But I guess, you know, Steve, obviously I face a question every year, hopefully every year that we make it to nationals about missing, you know, a national championship. I feel like I was part of a very special one in Stillwater when we won a playoff with four guys and took down maybe the greatest player in all time in Tiger Woods there with Stanford. That was obviously great. But I guess what I've tried to do here, maybe it's justification for having not done that, is feel like we try to win the national championship every day with the way we carry ourselves, the way they've gone to school, the way they've graduated, the fathers and husbands that they've become. And I hopefully just remembered as a guy who, I guess, worked really hard, followed the rules. I had a nice compliment this summer, was at a junior tournament and had a coach walk up, said, we just took a poll of the people who do a really good job and follow the rules. And you're number one in our poll. So, that's rewarding. I've always tried to do things the right way. And then, kind of had a mantra for, I guess I got from Mike, when I left there, was just leave things better than you found it. And that goes for Georgia Tech. Hopefully the service at the GCAA has had some, my time there has been some benefit to the organization, and just again, try to leave college golf and Georgia Tech golf in a better place than I found it.
Class act, no doubt, no surprise to see you number one. You and I have been going back and forth for 25 years plus. So I value our friendship more than anything else. And I want to see you break that streak. I bring it up every year that one of the more mystifying things in all of college athletics, the Yellow Jackets have never won a national title in golf. And I don't say that to give you a zinger. I say that with the utmost respect with what you've done and Puggy's done, all that talent, and it just hasn't quite got there. Nothing would make me prouder as your friend for you to get one on the way out, and you can have your walk-off. That's how much I think of you.
I guess that could end up being the moment, and it could be the walk-off. But, no, I appreciate that. You know, our guys have we put every effort in, and we're not going to quit yet, and certainly I still go tonight. Every now and then I still play that one shining moment in my head and dream about it, but we'll keep after it.
How was the elevator last night before we let you go as you were working late into the evening?
Yeah, I guess that's the passion thing. I guess it had not gone away. It was about 7:30 and I was the last one in the building, and I just thought I'd kind of walk down the hall and check the doors, there's an elevator right by my office and there's another one down the hallway, and jumped in there about a little after 7:30 and went down. It's three floors and only went down a floor and a half, and it stopped and crashed. And at that point, I had no idea what I was going to do. And actually I've learned that, Die Hard and, some Jason Bourne movies, you can get out the top of an elevator. Sometimes it takes 3.5 hours to do it, but, got out of there a little after 10 and got home. So just another chapter in the book, I guess.
Bruce, always a pleasure. Appreciate you taking the time on College Golf Talk to join us. Congrats to you and the team, and continue with the rest of the fall and into next spring.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for all you do.
Pleasure. Likewise, my friend Bruce Hepler, the men's golf coach at Georgia Tech. One of the great ones. They're all great, Brentley. I date myself. Bruce dated himself. Like, he and I have been going back and forth at this for 25 plus years. I think the thing I admire and respect the most about Bruce, you ask a question, he will give you the answer. You might not like the answer, but it's not sugarcoated. It's not a generic response. He'll tell you the rankings were a mess, or he'll tell you people go to the clam bake instead of playing in a good tournament to help their 500 rule. So great get, setting him up timely with the win at Olympia Fields. And it shows you how hard it is that they haven't won, or that Mike Small, no one's owed anything. Don't get me wrong. But that one always baffles me. I bring it up every year that they've never gotten through to the finish line.
I think a clip of you saying that might be his alarm clock in the morning. It hits 6 a.m. and it's just a excerpt from Golf Central or College Central back in the day of you saying, you know, the most astonishing thing is Georgia Tech hasn't won a national championship in men's golf. And I'm right there with you. And I love the line, win a national championship every day. That's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to win a national championship every day, whether it's growing grass or making sure the kids are to the cross on time. So that's
I'm just trying to say, I'm just trying to stay above the 500 rule. My standards aren't nearly as high as winning a national.
How do you think he got out of that elevator? Like,
I can only imagine him flipping that door up. That's
and jumping.
Luckily, I've never had to pull a Jason Bourne or a Tom Cruise or
that's my biggest Bruce fear Willis. Though, is doing that, getting up there, and then the elevator decides that it wants to work again, and then you're done. So,
well, anyway. Good thing he isn't done. Great to catch up with Bruce Hepler. We referenced they beat Arizona State by a shot, Oklahoma State, North Carolina tied for third. Jose Le Ballester wins individually his first college win. I think winning that U.S. Amateur, watch out. I saw something that week at Hazeltine where, not that it wasn't there, but maybe because it was front and center and we did five straight days of, you know, a broadcast. He's a pretty complete player. As Bruce just said, no one has it all. His ball speed, where, how he can move it, I think his game translates. That jumps out to me, and you think about a potential 1-2 punch of Ballester and Summerhays. Watch out. I don't believe it's the only win for him this senior season.
Yeah, he's very similar, and it's an easy comparison, right, to compare him to John Rahm. But when you look at the power, and you know, no one's swing is exactly like John Rahm's, but I think Josele does a lot of the same things really well. And then the short game, the bunker play, the creativity around the greens, I think that just is he's kind of born with it, right, coming from Spain. And he's probably grew up idolizing Seve as well, even though definitely – far beyond Seve's time.
And real quickly, he has a relationship with Sergio Garcia. Sergio's father, Victor, has taught him through the years. There's a connection there. But a heck of a win by him. Georgia Tech, good to see North Carolina sort of step up and have a good showing. And it's what's always intriguing about the fall. You know, a team could finish 12th and second. To me, the Tar Heels are a team, if you're Andrew DiBattista, the head coach, you're like, all right, how do I get five that's looked like the five I've had in previous years to be somewhat competitive? But, you know, that was a great field. So, too, was Valero Texas Collegiate. Oklahoma beats Ole Miss by six. Auburn and Virginia tie for third. Vandy fifth. You were bullish on Oklahoma. I think we've all learned, Ryan Hibble, there's always something, and especially coming off a down year from their standards. Sooners always in the conversation. You say a level of concern for Auburn. No, it's early. Are they going to win 10 times like last year? No. And that's not being disrespectful. That is a monumental achievement to cap it off with a national championship. So, you know, a lot of moving parts from a team aspect. And then Ben James beats Josiah Gilbert from Auburn in a playoff to get a start into that tour event at Valero next spring. And, you know, you've referenced Ben James. We always talked about Gordon Sargent, Jackson Koivin. Ben James might be that guy that kind of doesn't get all the headlines, but he probably should.
Yeah, there's a very good chance, and maybe not a very good chance, but I wouldn't be surprised if the national championship, both team and individual, come out of this tournament. When you look at Oklahoma, I think that's the formula that Ryan Hibble wanted to go for from the start of this season, where you have Jay Summey and Drew Goodman just top 10 machines. Jay Summey, as we've seen, can go on these crazy birdie runs that not many guys in the country can go on. And he's also gotten eight or nine guys in the lineup or playing as an individual so far this season. So really love the depth there. And then Ben James, like you touched on it, overshadowed by those big names. Even going back to the recruiting class that he was in with Surratt and Nick Dunlap, this is a guy who, I think for many years, he was just the kid who committed to UConn when he was 11 years old. And credit to him, it's not easy. Like, there's been very few guys. I think Brad Dahlke is another good example, who have had the expectations early, but have kept that and have developed into really good players. And so Ben James, I mentioned it yesterday too, in a blog that I wrote on golfchannel.com. He's now at, I believe it's 11 PGA Tour University accelerated points. It's probably a stretch to think that he's going to get to 20 by the end of his junior season this May. But he's got a PGA Tour start now in his pocket at the Valero for winning this tournament in a playoff over Josiah Gilbert from Auburn. If he can make the cut there, which that's kind of been the next step for him, he's made five or six starts on the PGA Tour now, has only made one cut. So that's kind of the next step. But if he can pick off maybe two or three, you know, tournament or points via PGA Tour tournaments, he's in position right now to where he could win two National Player of the Year awards and boom, 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 he's at 20. And that would mean Jackson Koivin and Luke Clanton aren't. So that's certainly something to watch out for. And we have to give credit to Gordon Sargent, bounces back, T11 finish, not quite where we want to see him, but he is certainly trending back in the right direction for him.
Other quick results, Colorado winning the Tucker Invitational, your 25th team in the preseason rankings, perhaps the best Buffalo squad in quite some time since the Paul brothers were there. No primetime showing for the folks in Colorado. That's a whole other
football team.
Correct.
UCF's going to drum them on Saturday.
I hope so.
We were 14.5 point favorites.
That's a big number. That's a big number.
I'd take Colorado on that, but the Gus bus is full speed ahead.
Utah 14 shot win over Pepperdine, South Carolina, Cal, UCLA, Arizona at the Tyndall. NC State wins the Rod Meyers. Indiana taking the Purdue Fall Invitational. Clay Merchant, runner-up for the Hoosiers. The comeback kind of continues for him, doesn't it?
Yeah, the serious slipped rib syndrome, which he was diagnosed. And interesting, too, because he's not the only player on that Hoosiers roster right now who has experienced the same thing. I'm forgetting the kid's name, and you know, this is me being not as prepared as I should be, but pretty amazing for him to come back. He's been in college golf now for, 6 years or so. So certainly a feel-good story, and one that I hope to write a little bit about as he continues having success this year.
Let's transition to the ladies. Texas winning the Mason Rudolph Championship. Mississippi State's Avery Weed gets the individual title. Stanford debuts tomorrow, Thursday, the big match against Cal.
Finally.
Yes. Well, it's the quarter system. It's the quarter system there. South Carolina impressed again, finished second. Hannah Darling second. So obviously your inspirational interview has untapped a whole different layer of talent, and she's got a ton of it. It's good to see Laura Ionello, who left Arizona, Texas. You know, it's early. I was bullish on them at American Dunes in the Folds of Honor. They didn't quite have their best stuff. They're going to be right there. When you have Lauren Kim, Farrah O'Keefe, that 1-2 punch you can put against anyone in the country, in my estimation, I think you'll see a lot of wins from a Texas team that is young, talented, going to be fun to watch them sort of evolve of a new coach, getting to know them, and vice versa. The Schooner Fall Classic, Houston, the Cougars upsetting Auburn and Florida State. Anna Davis, Lottie Woad tied for second. Mirabelle Tang, our new favorite golfer on College Golf Talk, back-to-back wins. She can play. She is growing up. She has had quite a journey, losing her father, still very young, becoming a young woman in front of her eyes. And I mean that with the utmost respect, because we've spent time with her, and she's now, I think, comfortable in her surroundings, her own skin. We talk about 1-2 punches. You can put Mirabelle Tang and Lottie Woad right up there.
At the top. Number
as
one.
Good as any. It'll be interesting. Does Auburn have enough on the back end of the lineup? Does Florida State? Still September, late September. Those would be my pressing questions for them. And that's what Amy Bond said a couple weeks ago with us on the podcast of, they're there, they're young, they've got to figure it out.
Yeah, there's certainly some questions when you start to dive into the numbers for their 4 and 5 players. And for both these squads, I mean, I'm not so sure at this point that either coach is happy with the kind of performances they're getting out of a Rachel Gorley on Auburn's side, or Christina Cerchi, Kayla Williams on Florida State's side. And I know that both teams, though they finished second and third at this tournament, they're probably both pretty disappointed, because Houston is a good team. They're not a team that should be beating either of these programs. When you think of Auburn and Florida State, two teams that probably have expectations to get into match play this year. But everything's going to need to go right at that back end, and someone else is going to have to step up. And when you think about the Tigers, Anna Davis tied for second with Lottie Woad. Casey Weidenfeld gets back in the lineup. She top fives, but Katie Cranston, to me, is probably the player who has disappointed the most since she's been on campus. Just very up and down. She's got to find some consistency, I think, because if Auburn can get to, you know, maybe a three-headed monster at the top, that might be good enough.
Quick results across the country. Ole Miss, Kalen McNabb, they sweep at the Mary Fossum up there in Michigan. Tar Heels double dipping at the Virginia Cavalier Regional preview. So good start for them. And then a busy schedule upcoming in the next 5, 6, 7 days. The Wyndham Memorial, Ben Hogan Collegiate for the men. ladies, Windy City Collegiate, the Molly Intercollegiate. You've got the Blessings in Arkansas. This is the 4 to 6 week run. It's kind of mid to late September through about Halloween, and then everyone disappears for 3 months.
And then we go to St. Andrews, October for
we do for we some do great, indeed.
Great Scottish food, a lot of haggis. Just haggis.
I might more of a fish and chip guy. I don't delve I know, into I'm just all the delicacies. It was the good one. We again thank Bruce Hepler for joining us. Truly one of the good guys that has done so much and so many good things for the game. And I love the Tark story. I love the as he said, he's gone. I can tell the story.
Can you imagine
Bruce Hepler driving a van around Louisville, Kentucky with Stacey Augmond, Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony?
What are they listening to? What are they listening to on the, I mean, I can, you know.
Who knows? But you're too young to remember that basketball team. Heck, you might not even have been born. No, they were.
Who was the coach?
When were you born? Jerry Tarkanian, Tark the Shark.
Yeah, so 1990. That's when I was born. So they won in 91. Is it back to back, right?
No. They won in 90, and then in 91, Duke. It was a rematch of the 90s. Hurley and Leitner beat them in the semis, Duke would go on to win their back to back. But
I knew it was right around that time. Yeah, they were good. And did they have some sort of sanction after that?
We don't need to.
I mean, that was probably the Colt 45. Maybe that was.
But Bruce Hepler, as you said, I got the towel for Tark. Jerry Tarkanian would sit on the bench chewing a towel. Go Google it. Yeah, again, you're too young. He just chewed on a towel for 2 hours. Yes, I'm sure he took it out. No, Tark's towel, Tark the Shark, that Bruce Hepler was running those guys around. I can put that story up against any for a college golf coach that we've dealt with through the years.
He's the best storyteller in college golf, I think. Just and then not only the delivery, but the experiences. I mean, even getting stuck in an elevator last night. Now, who else does that happen to but Bruce Hepler?
And if that happens and you don't get home till 10 or 11, you probably say, hey, boys, I need to reschedule. 9:30 a.m., he was online. He fulfilled the commitment. And we appreciate him for joining us on College Golf Talk. We also appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening. For Brent Leon Burka, we'll do it again next week.